The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
In the last 7 years, I think this is maybe the first time that we've actually been able to talk not only about life of our guests, but maybe some finances as well, Holly.
Which is so timely. I mean, show of hands, how many of us are having lots of fun in this recession? No, having fun in the recession.
Oh, sorry. I heard show of hands.
Johnny.
I like this. No, this is great.
This is neat.
This is going well.
Yeah. Yes.
I think of today, though, Halls, as like, this is going to be a therapy session for us because we'll just pick George's brain.
Yes.
And he'll leave this being like, man, I should have like charged them more money.
Exactly. Exactly.
Trust George me, I did Campbell not think this was a money-making scheme.
We'll see at the end of this 30 minutes. You
but
two
if you tell five friends.
George Campbell, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for saying yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I had no option, truthfully.
Excellent.
I do whatever the publicist says, and you guys truly just seemed fun.
Those are our best. We're like, could we ever? And they're like, sure. I'm like, perfect.
Yes.
Tired of the rejections.
I have a fascination with Canada, and so anything in Canada, I'm like, yes, sign us up. And my book is sold in Canada, I found out. It's in Indigo Bookstore. So I was
yes.
Like, we have an in now.
And
Canadians will find
thing.
Me.
And we need this kind of, I think, moral support because times are tough.
It's tough for everyone. But
yeah.
I'll tell you, Canadian callers, as they call into the Ramsey show, the numbers hurt my brain. They're like, yeah, this is just how it is in Canada. I'm like, oh my goodness.
It does.
We need to do something about this.
The math isn't mathing.
So I'll try to help with what I can.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
All right. We like to ask this guilt testing question, George, because we never know where it's going to go. And that is, who are you and where did you come from?
Ooh. Is this just you want the a straight answer?
Yeah.
Whatever you want. This
whatever.
Is up to you. However
yeah.
you.
This is your podcast.
Fly.
Wow. I mean, who am I? That's a very existential question. A child of God. We'll start there.
Ooh, love that.
I was born in Boston back in 89, and I was born and raised there for 20 years. I flew south to finish college, and so I ended up in Mobile, Alabama, which is the heart of the South.
Wow.
And I graduated from college there, got an internship at Ramsey. Just kind of a knucklehead 23-year-old trying to figure my life out as a Renaissance man creative who could do everything but nothing really well. And so 11 years later, I'm still here, and I've moved across a lot of different roles, social media, email marketing, to host an MC, and now I'm a Ramsey personality. And I get to teach people about money, share my own money journey, speak on stages, get behind microphones, co-host the Ramsey Show with Dave, write books about this stuff. And so it truly has been an amazing journey, and I'm humbled by every step.
How did you escape not having an accent, being from Boston and then spending time in the Deep South?
I think it was survival, truthfully.
Okay.
I think it was just like you assimilate to the culture. And so I just traded my like wicked sick guys for like the y'all and bless your heart.
Okay.
And so I'm a chameleon when it comes to culture. I just adapt to whatever will help me survive.
I feel that. I do. I did a little research, which, as our projectors know, doesn't happen often.
No.
I Googled you. I want to see what people were asking about this George guy.
Oh, no.
Here are the
Have
top
you ever done this?
No, I'm too nervous. I imagine it's nothing. When people are Googling about you, it's never like, how is he so awesome?
Yeah.
It's like, how short is he? I'm like, okay, why is that the question everyone's Googling?
Is that on there, Holly? That's so funny.
Okay, here are the nine things. Starting from the
There's
bottom,
nine.
We're going from nine to one, okay? George Campbell, Arabic?
Yes, that is true. My parents are immigrants from the Middle East, Egypt, and Syria. I do speak fluent conversational Arabic, grew up in an Arabic Baptist church. Yes, they exist. I think there's about five in the U.S. There's probably a few in Canada, too.
Yeah.
And so very interesting, beautiful culture. Love the food. Love the people. And if you're good, I might drop an Arabic line at the end of this.
Oh, I hope so. Let's be
good,
Johnny. Does that mean that you're a better Christian because you understand Jesus's actual words?
I do feel a deeper connection than most people. Like, you know, and here in America, we've sort of created this like American Jesus, which is very confusing.
White Jesus.
Yes. And I'm always just like, but you know where he's from, right? And so that part always confused me. And so I have not been back to the motherland, to the Middle East. I'd love to go someday and experience it, do a trip to, you know, Israel, Egypt. Once things hopefully calm down over there, once we have a little more peace in the Middle East, I'd be happy to visit.
Yeah, absolutely. Ethnicity. So we've already clarified that.
Yes. I did a 23andMe just to verify, and it was 100%.
Just to make sure.
It was like North African, Egypt, and Western Asia, which is Syria. And so
these
questions
were actually George asked these questions about himself just to make sure that they were accurate.
It was me trying to figure out who I am.
Yeah. Who am I, and where did I come from?
Yeah.
Your height came in at number 7.
I guess because I make a lot of short jokes, people are always like, how short is he? Or they meet me in person, and the first thing they say is, wow, you're shorter than I thought. And I went, well,
yeah,
you ain't prettier than I thought.
Yeah.
But I am 5'6".
Oh.
And it's one reason I stay humble. You know, God made me 5'6" for a reason.
I appreciate you didn't put like little increments, because I would say I'm 5'2¾".
You know, I could add the half, but I feel like I just own it.
Yeah.
You know?
Johnny's
I think tall
a
people
monster.
Get away with, yeah, Johnny gets away with not having much personality as a tall, you know, as a tall human. You can just get away with more.
Yeah.
By
5'7",
doing less.
What do you do? You know, I'm dunking on you.
Exactly. So, I'm a proud short king. Is that we now have a name for that. Back when I was young, we just got bullied for it. And now it's like,
aww,
you can add it to your Twitter bio.
It's okay,
great. I have fun with it.
Then salary comes in. People wondering about Wikipedia. They are searching your book at number 4. Your net worth comes in at number 3.
Okay.
Your age at number 2. And guess what the number 1 thing that is being searched about you?
Wife?
Yes!
That's big.
Your wife is
My
the coolest
wife, Whitney,
thing
would be
about
so
you.
I'm so honored. I guess, are they wondering, like, how did he, who married him? Is it like a question mark? Or are they hoping I'm single? I don't know what the heart behind that is.
They just are curious. Is this George
They just know
Feller
behind
with
every
wife.
Great short king is a short queen.
So there you go. That's what the world is wondering about
Better
you.
Better to not wear heels.
It feels very, all of that feels vain. It's all, you know, what's his height? How much does he make? What's his net worth?
Yeah.
No one, you know, it's no one's ever really asking about the heart.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the heart then.
Yeah.
Cut that up.
Forget all those questions. That was
How's your heart?
Did she keep a piece of paper on the desk just to rip?
100%.
Yeah, there was actually nothing written on it at all. She memorized that part and she's like, I'm out. So you start working at Ramsey. Was Ramsey the goal going into this, or did you just like, oh wait, they said yes and hired me?
I think a little bit of both. As you guys know, as a college grad, you're just like, somebody wants me, anybody. And I was a big fan of John Acuff and stuff Christians like, and that whole movement and book and blog. And so I wanted to work with John. And so I reached out to him over Twitter. And he got me connected with HR, and they were like, well, you already graduated college. You can't be an intern. So we need to find you a temp job if this is going to work. So that was really my foot in the door. I was attracted to people who had a inspiring message, sharing it in a funny and creative and humorous way. So that's really what drew me to Ramsey. It wasn't Dave at first. It was, well, this guy happens to work for this Ramsey place. I guess I'm moving to Nashville from Alabama. So I moved to Tennessee for that internship. And a few months later, the internship ended and we both liked each other. And so I looked around for any job and I found one in email marketing. And I was like, I built a website once in high school. I could probably build emails. And so I figured it out. I was just real hungry, read whatever book I needed to, and landed that full-time job there. And that was July of 2013. So coming up on 11 years now.
Wow. Congrats.
Thank
you. That's incredible. I mean, working in a place that you are working in now, you have so many resources at your fingertips by way of people and wisdom. Was it all it was cracked up to be, looking back over the past, you know, decade? Was it worth it?
Oh, yeah. It was 100% worth it. I feel like this place truly raised me. I started here just sort of, you know, like post-college punk rock skater boy and not really knowing what I wanted to do. And through, you know, a lot of the leadership here and opportunity and just working my tail off and meeting some amazing people, I just sort of found what I was wired to do, as my friend Ken Coleman likes to say. And so over that time, I moved through different roles in my career journey. I think this is my 6th job here and probably my last job here as a Ramsey personality. But I really wanted to to share a message and be on stages. That was my heart. I was a musician in a former life. And so I always enjoyed entertaining. And through the Ramsey plan, it changed my life. Going through Financial Peace University, when I started here, I was $40,000 in debt, $36,000 in student loans, $4,000 in credit cards. I really had no clue what I was doing with money. And luckily, Ramsey onboards you by going through Financial Peace University. And that's really where the money journey started, where I went, oh my gosh, if a broke millennial like me can do this, you know, anyone can do this. And so as I lived out the plan, I met my wife here at Ramsey. She actually just retired like 4 days ago to stay home with our daughter now. So she had an amazing 9-year career here. And so I miss my actual work wife now. It's sad.
That's so sweet.
It's really sweet. So this place means a lot to us for 1,000 reasons, but the money plan is really what got me on this path to help people figure it out, regardless of their age and where they're at financially. The whole book that I wrote, Breaking Free from Broke, was to give people hope that it's still possible today, regardless of where they're at.
Yeah.
For those, I mean, not that it's about me, but I mean, I love talking sports, I love talking music, and I love talking money. And I find that we're in a society now where household debt is at an all-time high. We have an obsession with debt because of all of our love of credit cards. Are we just hopeless? Are we ever going to get out of things like this, George?
Well, I think that really that points to like the fall of man, and we can go back to Genesis and explain why we are the way that we are. But I think there's a subset of people. It's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think you can or you think you can't, you're right, as Henry Ford once said. And so what I found is the people who I meet on the debt-free stage, they will overcome anything in life because that is the spirit that they have within them. Then we have what we call the Eeyore spirit, this sort of hopeless, woe is me, cynicism, victim mentality. And regardless of where people are at, this is not a, like, I understand there's people in really terrible situations. I'm not here to minimize that. But for the average person, if you're tweeting from your smartphone about how hard your life is, it's probably not that hard. Like, I'm just going to be honest with you. And so I think we have the mentality of this generation is it's everyone else's fault. Someone else needs to fix it. Oh my gosh, the boomers ruined it for us all. And have you seen how hard it is in the job market? And then I meet these other Gen Z and millennial people who are like, oh, I'm doing what I love. I'm making great money. I got out of debt. I bought my first home. I'm enjoying my life. I have less stress. And I'm like, well, it's not a generational thing. It's a mindset thing. Every generation has had that. We've had, you know, we got cynical boomers out there. We got cynical Gen Zers. And so that's what I ended the book with, is a chapter about hope versus cynicism and how I'm a recovering cynic who every day has to make that choice to go like, okay, yes, there's a lot of bad things happening in the world, but what can I do? What can I actually control? How can I affect my family, my community, and my money?
It's interesting, you know, there are cynical people, there are positive people, but we really do find ourselves in, I hate to use this, an unprecedented time. I mean, these cycles happen all the time throughout history, but we were raised in a day and age where it was the 80s and it was challenging, but we had the beautiful 90s. And so the thoughts about money that we were raised with are now not necessarily translating into the reality of how do you deal with the recession? There was a recession in Alberta before the COVID pandemic happened. No. The thing happened. And so people were already struggling and now they don't have jobs and they're locked in and they can't get out. And so there's a lot of families that we hear that are just going through a rough time. And with our taxes being what, 65% in Canada?
Like, oh man, that hurts my brain.
Projectors, correct me. I could be wrong on that number, but it is wild. I mean, true story. I moved from Alberta to Ontario and housing went from affordable in one community. 2 months later, it was $200,000 to buy that same house.
Wow.
So there was a lot of things that are happening. Food prices have doubled and we still make the same amount of money. So what kind of advice do you have for families that are now thinking we have to have two jobs, but now we have to put the kids in summer camp, and summer camp is $300 to $500 a week for one kid. What are some of those things that you can do when you don't have community to support you and you have to start shelling out, because how else do you manage?
Yeah. Well, as my friend Dr. John Deloney says, you got to choose reality. And so we can't live in la la land and just wish and hope. We have to go, okay, what are our actual bills and what do we actually make? And what that comes down to is making a budget. Even if it's not pretty, at least we know the deficit. At least we know the gap we need to make up. Most people, it's just emotion swirling about, oh my gosh, the bills are so high. Well, how high? And are we going to be able to make them this month? And what do we need to prioritize? And so making a plan, that intentional spending plan of a budget, is the first thing I would tell people to do. And a budget is not for broke people. A budget's not for rich people. It's for anyone that wants to have some confidence with their money plan. And so if you realize we're $500 in the red every month, well, that looks a lot like $6,000 over a year on the credit card of how much you're going to put on that. And that's what we find is it's not this big thing. It's that daily, monthly thing happening in their life that compounds year after year. And so if you can start to gain control of that, because now we go, okay, $500. Can I get a side job for a season to make up the difference so that we can get our life under control? And that's where the Ramsey plan comes in real handy, especially in times where it's tough. You know the best time to not have debt? When there's a recession. You know the best time to have an emergency fund? When the world feels like it's falling apart. And a lot of people are just used to payments and they can't even picture life without the car payment. And they don't even know where to begin to save up and do that. But a lot of the times it's living on less than we make. It's driving the beater car until we can upgrade to a less beater car. And it's that level of delayed gratification that we find causes people to build wealth, to have success, and to have less stress. Mm-hmm. So the budget is the first step you got to take.
Yeah.
So you write this book. It's available now for those who want to grab it. Is it a book for poor people? Is it a book for the next generation? Or is it for everybody?
That's a great question. Is it a book for everybody? No. Is it a book for people that are not where they want to be financially, even if they're not broke? Because we find people even that are debt free and they're still confused by all of the investing traps out there and they still don't know the best way to build wealth. So I cover all of that in Breaking Free from Broke. And I even say in the book, this is not a book for white people or black people, Republicans or Democrats or the rich or conservative. I said, this is a book for anyone that is just ready for a change. What they've been doing has not been working. They don't have confidence in their money plan. And so I wanted to write a book that anyone could pick up, regardless of your level of financial literacy, and go, oh, thank you for making it easy to understand what the heck a mutual fund is, what this new investing trap is, debt product is. And so the first two thirds break down this whole system of debt, this toxic money culture that I think has now infiltrated to Canada. So I think the Canadian listeners and viewers and readers, they'll go, oh, this is a lot like what's going on here. I think we're a lot more similar than we are different, even though an account name might change. It's the TFSA instead of the 401k, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of it will translate to the Canadian readers. And the hope of the book is that you walk away with a little smile on your face going, I got this. It's going to be okay. Like I'm done playing the victim card. I'm ready to win with money. And even though it might be hard, at least I know what to do next. That was the purpose of the book, not to just leave you with emotion, but leave you with action.
Yeah, because money's just Bitcoin. A tool. Oh, Bitcoin. Exactly. Yes, that too. I'm going to start mining
Nailed
for
it.
Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I just picture like a tiny pickaxe.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Right?
Like mining should be reserved for physical labor, not for a dude in his parents' spare bedroom.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just think we give too much credit to these miners out there.
Goodness, I love that.
But yes. Electricity, trying to mine their bitcoins.
Wait, do they have to pay carbon tax?
That's a good question.
Yes, I have so many questions. But yes, money is a tool, and it's interesting when people combine faith and finances. And then you were a musician and finances. That one is fascinating for me because a lot of musicians don't understand about the business side of their music. And there's that juxtaposition between, but it's my music. It's my art. I can't taint it with finances. And then with faith too, there's that element of, money making your faith less than or dirty. Can you help dispel some of these, I guess, beliefs?
Yeah, it is weird, especially in Christian culture. There's a sort of like moral high horse we get on where money feels like this icky thing and we shouldn't even think about it. And so instead, we're just going to be broke and let our family suffer. And nowhere in the Bible do I see them saying like it talks a lot about it. There's over 2,300 scriptures just talking about wealth and possessions and money. And a lot of it points to debt. being a bad thing. And so that if you looked at some of the main principles, you know, Proverbs 22:7, the borrower is slave to the lender. It doesn't say unless you have a 2% interest rate on your mortgage. It just says the borrower is slave to the lender. And again, that's not a moral thing. You can still get into heaven. It's not a salvation issue. But we found that, you know, you don't have autonomy and freedom with your life when you owe other people money. And so as we look at other, you know, passages in scripture, Romans 13:8 says, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For whoever loves one another has fulfilled the law. That's like the best Jesus juke in there. It's like, let no debt remain outstanding. Well, there is one debt you can have. Love one another. Like, oh man, he got it. He got us good. We were all leaning in with bated breath going, what's he going to say next? And even budgeting. The Bible talks about the concept of making a plan for your money with Luke 14:28-30. For which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it, lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. And so there's almost this making fun of the person who doesn't have a plan for their money. So it's a very interesting concept when you start to look at the Bible as it relates to finances. And that's how Ramsey was built. Dave went broke in the late 80s, total bankruptcy, had $4 million in real estate, over $1 million net worth, lost it all in bankruptcy, and came to Jesus and went, what does the Bible have to say about money? Because we look to the Bible for other, you know, wisdom in so many other areas. But when it comes to money, we look at the crypto bros to tell us how to run our finances. And it's the math ain't math in there.
I love that. The math ain't math in. This is the Why Me Project. So I want to dive into a Why Me moment that you've experienced in your life.
Mm.
Could be a valley where things weren't going well, maybe in your childhood.
Yeah, you know, I wish therapy. A lot of young people think it's going to be this linear, like I go to school, I get good grades, I'll go to college, I'll get married, I'll buy a house, I'll have a good job, I'll have a great life.
That was what we were raised with.
That's the path. And it led us to a lot of, you know, misery, frustration, cynicism, debt. And so my life was a roller coaster as well, with a lot of, you know, peaks and valleys and figuring it out. And, you know, I'll just name a few and you'll kind of see the trajectory. And so when I was 18 years old, I was fired from my dream job, which was working at the Apple store. I was a creative, teaching people how to use the technology. And I was like, I could work here forever. This is my sweet spot. And then I was fired. They did a bunch of sort of like layoff-ish fires. This was 09, right after the recession hit. And so I lost that job and thought, this was my life. Then I moved south, finished college, and was banking on this dream job, hosting on stage for their winter jam. We were a sponsor. Our college was giving away scholarships. And I was banking all summer. I moved back to Boston and I was like, well, I'm going back to Mobile, Alabama, and I'm going to get this job. And I got an email in late August saying, hey, we're moving on. We're not going to choose you for the job. Good luck. And my whole life, I was like, well, what is my life now?
Yeah.
And so I got that internship at Ramsey, moved here. I got married. And 2 years later, the marriage fell apart. And that was probably the biggest valley I've experienced, especially coming out of the Arabic Baptist culture, which is very conservative. Like, this stuff just rarely happens. And so that was another, you know, a shameful moment where I was like, what is my life now? This has sort of given me a scarlet letter. And climbing out of that, I also didn't really know what I was doing with my career. And I sort of had this existential crisis of, should I just move back home and just start over and just find something else? And I was sort of in this depression for a good 6 months. And I met my now wife, Whitney, at Ramsey Solutions. And in 2017, we started dating. And by late 2018, we were married. And I've stepped into this new role, emceeing and hosting and doing what I feel like born and wired to do, what God created me to do. And all of that helped me step out of that darkness and valley. And now I'm on a peak. We have a beautiful 8-month-old daughter named Mia, who is the light of my life. And I'm like, this is God's goodness on full display in this sweet baby's face. And so I feel so blessed, and it's not without its, you know, trials and tribulations and valleys, but I think that makes the peaks even sweeter, because you can look back and go like, that was God. I could not have carried myself through that. Not on my own volition and strength could I have just mustered it up to be where I am today. And so I think that's where a lot of my self-deprecation and humility comes from, because I sort of just have to laugh and go like, God, why me? And then also now at the peak, you go, God, why me? This is hilarious that you chose me to do this kingdom work. And so I feel very blessed to do what I do. And that's just a short snippet of my life story for you.
Mm-hmm. Your life is wrapped up in a lot of things, money. You write this book as an author and somebody who's, you know, immersed themselves in finances. Is there something that you learned from your own book? Something that maybe you didn't know that you came about saying, oh, snap, I didn't know that.
Yeah, writing a book is not for the faint of heart. And no. I thought at Ramsey, you have this amazing team, all the support. No, they were just like, yeah, go write. I was like, but yeah, I don't know how to do that. I've never written like
but
a
how?
Book. Like I write in tweets and paragraphs, not in chapters and, you know, threading the arc. And so it was a labor of love just to figure out how to be a writer. And it was a huge challenge. It was a lifelong goal, you know, since the third grade where I made my little laminated fictional book that you get to present in the class.
Yes.
And so it was a personal challenge of really going, no, what do you really believe? No, how do you really simplify it? What is the funnier joke about this? What is the more true thing about this? And so it really caused me to dig deeper than just what would Dave say and what are the Ramsey principles? And instead it became, what does God want you to say through this book that will affect people in a way that no other person could? And that became a very different question versus, well, I'm writing a book for Ramsey and it's got to have the Ramsey principles and how do I do it my way? It became a much weightier thing on my shoulders to go, no, this needs to mean something. I want this to last the test of time. I want to say something that is from the heart that maybe is even hard to say. And so doing all of that, I think the big lesson I learned when it comes to money was that it's so much simpler than we think. And we just overcomplicate it thanks to all of the noise out there on social media and what our parents think and the boundaries and the pressures. And we just sort of spin out with this overwhelming sense of all of the options out there, paralysis by analysis. And this book helped me sort of reaffirm that these principles still work today. They're simpler than you ever thought. And it's possible if you just follow a proven plan instead of thinking that you have, you know, the pride, the greed, the ego. And those are the principles. You know, Proverbs 13:11 was a guiding principle for me. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. Yeah. And just sort of slowing down your life, which is something we're all trying to do, right? The whole the new wave of like, let's put down the phones and let's get off social media. I think we're all just trying to slow down because we were not created to live like microwaves. We were created to live like a crock pot, just slowly simmering, steady. You know, God was never in a rush. And yet our lives are just so scattered, running a million miles an hour. And that's reflected with our sloppy finances. So when I find that we just slow down and keep it simple, we end up having more joy, less stress, and more wealth down the line.
Breaking From Broke is available now at George Camel on the socials and the YouTube. If Dave's not available, if John's not available, if all the other Ramsey personalities are not available, you have Holly and
I'm your guy.
To tell people to not be dumb and we'll come hang out with you down in Nashville.
We can sub
in. I would love that. And much love to all of the Canadian viewers, listeners. We get calls all the time from the Ramsey Show. So feel free to call into the Ramsey Show. The phone line still works. And so we'd love talking to our Canadian viewers and listeners and appreciate you guys having me on.
George, this is good.
Thank you.
So we get a bunch of nuggets of goodness from him.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that he didn't give me enough. So I'm buying the book so I could learn everything else.
Yes. I would say my biggest takeaway. Can I do a takeaway today?
Of course.
I think sometimes we think there's some kind of in money and it's just something to use. And it's incredible how when we don't have enough, how God provides.
Yeah.
It's wild. So I like to, and you call it this too, right? Godonomics.
Yeah.
And how we can be going through really hard, challenging seasons where you only get X number of dollars, but you have to spend. And now you're slowly accumulating a financial hardship. And so God still is good in every season. And it's been incredible in our own lives, just seeing how God has provided in those moments that we need. So money's just money. It's a tool. And here we go. God's got us.
With that said, I mean, we talk about relationships and how we struggle with relationships. A lot of times people don't think of a money relationship, but a lot of relationships and money are not good.
Yeah.
And they say what, like 81% of people out of high school have no idea about a financial relationship, and they just think, oh, credit cards and everything else.
Yeah. So I think knowledge is power. Yeah. And even if it's not going to get you out of debt next week, bad one, you know, do the budgets, do the things, because over time, you know, it can turn around.
But how is, I mean, that is exactly like our life in general. You want to lose weight. You're not going to lose weight overnight.
What?
You didn't get to where we are without it. It's financially too. We spent. Oh, now we got to try to get out of that. That's not, unless we win the lottery.
But who's playing the lottery? Like, we're not supposed
not getting
to.
Overnights.
Yeah. Gambling, we do not support.
We're not supporting. I'm just saying, what happens if like a friend of mine wins it and it's like, oh, Johnny, by the way, here's $1 million to get you out of debt.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, right. But that's only a little bit. I've like way more than $1 million in debt.
Is there another $2 million?
Anyways, with that said, big shout out to George. Thank you to the Ramsey team for hooking us up as well. Sarah,
who's
a part of George's crew. She's phenomenal. And thank you to everybody, all the projectors who continue to help and support 7 years of us doing this.
Yes, 7 years. So guys, thank you so much for being on this journey with us. Feel free to ask questions, write comments. We'll do our best to facilitate those. We do love hearing from you. And you can always check us out on Facebook, X, Instagram, and YouTube. The YouTube. And of course, faithstrongtoday.com.